Live from the campus of Brooklyn College, it is Geek Speak with Ian Levenstein. Ladies and gentlemen, Ian Levenstein.
Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. This is episode 12 of the Geek Speak podcast, of course, live at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Well, recorded live, that is. And this is also recorded live at BrooklynCollegeRadio.org, as I realized after I had gone off the air last week that this upcoming Thursday, Brooklyn College Radio will be having a basketball game on in my usual time slot from 6 to 7, so I'm recording it a day early. This is Wednesday here. It'll probably end up on the internet tomorrow, because I don't feel like staying here all night working on the show notes and all that, so this will probably go up as normal on Thursday, but just letting you know, those of you listening on BrooklynCollegeRadio.org, you're probably hearing a basketball game right now, as this has been recorded. So, once again, there was a special episode of Geek Speak this past week, this past weekend, that is, episode 11.5 of Geek Speak, which I recorded having to do with the X-Men Deadly Genesis miniseries, which was released last month from Marvel Comics, and Ed Brubaker had a very interesting interview up at Newsarama this past week, and I devoted a 20-minute episode of Geek Speak to it live from my home. So the sound quality is not nearly as good as it usually is, because obviously it was from my home, but the USB mic does a good job, and now that I'm using Adobe Audition, I'm actually able to noise cancel pretty decently with that, so it sounded much, much better than my previous recording at home. But anyway, I'm ready to record episode 12, and you guys are ready to listen, I hope at least, because if you're not ready to listen, then you probably need to turn it off right about now, but don't do that, I'm a nice guy, really, really. Anyway, got a lot to talk about on today's show. The Xbox 360, since that seems to be the ongoing theme here with Geek Speak, the Xbox 360 plays Xbox games much more beautiful than their original Xbox counterparts, and I'll get into that. Also going to get into Xbox 360 conspiracies going around now. People are capitalizing over the shortage of Xbox 360s all over the net, and especially on eBay. And I'm going to definitely get into that as well. Got a listener email to talk about on today's show. Once again, from my buddy Rob over at CoinOp TV. And he had a very nice email that he sent to me, and I will certainly discuss that on the show. And I'll also be announcing what the next Showcase Spotlight is going to be about. And it has something to do with Rob. So hopefully, I really hope that you guys will enjoy that as well. And ways to get people off of your network when at a hotel. Very, very interesting turn of events with that as well, and I will certainly get into that on today's show. But I'm going to start things off with information about the Xbox 360, because like I said, that seems to be the ongoing theme. And over the past couple of weeks, as the Xbox 360 has been released, people have been tooling around with their Xbox games to see, you know, which ones played and which ones didn't. And I've also been tooling around with the software itself to see if indeed Xbox games played any differently on the Xbox 360. And there was actually some improvement on the games that do work on the Xbox 360. Because again, there's plenty that don't. But don't get me into that rant again, because that could last a long time, trust me. Yeah, the games that do work have much better graphics than they did on the Xbox 360. Some of them are not nearly as noticeable as others, because a lot of them had great graphics to begin with. But there were some nice additions on this. Certain Xbox games, like for instance DOA, had some graphical glitches in them, and were not nearly as polished as they should have been on the original Xbox. And with the Xbox 360 and its HD capabilities, well, Xbox game just looks that much more beautiful on these. And that's certainly an improvement. Because like I said, Xbox was nice to begin with, but when you have an Xbox game in HD quality on an Xbox 360, that works. The polygons are completely cleaned up. You got the graphics going in there. Nice little AI twitches here and there that used to happen with the Xbox games are completely null on the Xbox 360. And that's always a plus, I gotta tell you. Because like I said, I'm not too much of a graphics guy. I'm more of a gameplay guy over graphics, but graphics are nice. And there were plenty of great games that did come out for the Xbox. I myself don't own an Xbox, as I've made clear over the past, but a lot of my friends do. A lot of the people listening to the show, I'm sure, do. And there are plenty of supporters of the Xbox system out there. Even after the Xbox 360 came out, there are people that are still buying Xbox games because they're still making Xbox games. So why not? And the improvements are certainly, certainly noticeable. Now, polygon cleanup is something that I would really, really like to see with the PlayStation 3. When you're playing your PlayStation 2 games, I mean, PlayStation 2 looks amazing to begin with. Could you imagine what the PlayStation 2 would look like on the PlayStation 3? Because like I said, it's going to go HD, like the Xbox 360 did, and you're automatically going to get at least some sort of upgrade with that. And upgrades are always fun. Upgrades make me happy. I dance for upgrades, especially on old games. You didn't really notice it nearly as much when the PlayStation 2 came out, when you tried to play your PlayStation games on it. Most of the games play pretty much as well on the PlayStation 2 as they did on your original PlayStation. This day and age, that's a little different. For those of you who live in Japan, I'm sure you all know about the slim lines. And like I said, I did talk about that on an earlier podcast about how there are some games that are no longer backwards compatible, which really freaks me out because how could you make your system not backwards compatible with something after it was for all these years? I don't know. But like I said, don't get me started on another rant here. I really like starting myself on rants. I really, really do. I've realized that. But the main difference why PlayStation games didn't look any different on the PlayStation 2 is mostly because, well, there was no HD improvement from one system to another there. I would have loved to see something like that, but HD didn't really exist back then. It's as simple as that. If it did, then just imagine what your PlayStation games will look like now. Now, also, if there is backwards compatibility that far on the PlayStation 3, which I'm hoping for, which a lot of people are hoping for, and I'm sure will at least exist with certain games, not for all of them probably, because as of now, we don't even know if PlayStation 2 games are going to be completely backwards compatible on PlayStation 3. We don't know that yet. So PlayStation games, I'm really not holding out any hopes. But could you imagine as well PlayStation games looking 10 times better on PlayStation 3? That would make my life right there. Yeah, you know I'm a geek when I say something like that'll make my life. Wow. But Xbox 360 owners are very happy right now that their Xbox games look cleaner. You don't really expect that when you're upgrading your system. You expect an upgrade in games with the actual 360 game, sure. But Xbox does indeed have an improvement here. Now, there is a website that actually shows the improvement from Xbox to Xbox 360. The upgrade from a normal resolution to an HD resolution firsthand. And I will have a link to that in the show notes. It's really fun, actually, because you actually get to see the original screenshot, and then you mouse over it, and it becomes the HD screenshot, and you see all of those graphical tweaks that I was talking about firsthand. And like I said, they are very, very noticeable. I thought they were not going to be at first. I really did not expect much. Because they're Microsoft, what can I say? How could you expect anything from Microsoft after all they've done over the years? God, you know? And as I see Vista more and more, I'm really not getting impressed with that. But that's for a later time. Dear God. Ooh, I could see through my windows. That's nice and special. Ah, come on. Get window ones. But I digress. I haven't said that in a couple episodes. I am happy to see that Xbox fans are happy about something, at least, after the crashes and the blue screens of death and the scratching of the discs and all the problems everybody's been having with the Xbox 360, there is a silver lining, my friends. It is there. It is staring you right in the face. And everybody can at least be happy about that. So Xbox 360 people rejoice. You might only have about 13 games out right now, but you do have plenty of games to play that are Xbox games that will make your life more fun. And it'll make it look a little more pretty, too. And I'm a guy, but I'll admit, I like pretty. Pretty is a good thing. Nothing wrong with that. I'll awe at cute things from now and then. I'm just that kind of guy. First person to make a homosexual joke, I know where you live. But, yeah. Xbox 360. You're looking at least somewhat good in the eyes of Xbox fans now. Let's keep it up, shall we? You know, I know I've been playing that song way too often when I can actually hum along to it. That's fantastic. All right, so another piece of Xbox 360 news here. This is coming out of newsfactor.com. And as always, I will have it listed in the show notes. And I have to go a little old school with the stories that I'm reading for you today on GeekSpeak. I had to actually go online and print these out as opposed to having my beautiful Firefox up and ready with all the stories because, well, quite frankly, I don't have Firefox in here anymore. I don't have the internet in here anymore, as those of you who listened to episode 10 found out. But I'll live, and so will you guys, because there's still going to be a good quality show coming. At least, I hope so. Anyway, here's a story coming out of newsfactor.com. In several instances, eBay has suspended the users who offered the boxes of Xbox 360s for sale after determining that they violated eBay's policy against deceptive listings. Several of the listings have been removed. How hot is the Xbox 360? Some people offered hundreds of dollars just to buy the cardboard box in which it's packed. Oh my lordy, folks! Now, it's been done before. This is not a new phenomenon here. When the PSP came out, there were so many people putting up their PSP boxes on eBay. There was one dude who got $700 for a PSP box. And he made it perfectly clear in the listing, too, that it was a PSP box. Never said anything about the system actually being there. It was just a box. But the guy who bought it was obviously too stupid to figure that out. I've learned this over the years. There are stupid people in the world. Plenty of stupid people out there. I've met most of them already. There's plenty of them that go to this college. There's plenty of people that don't go everywhere. Plenty of people in New York, there's plenty of people in Los Angeles, there's plenty of people in Seattle, there's plenty of people in St. Louis, Minnesota, that are stupid. Plenty of people in Europe, too, that are stupid. I would like to say I'm one of the not stupid people, and I hope that a lot of my listeners would say that about themselves, too. But there are people out there who will buy the boxes and expect to get the actual product, because they don't look carefully. Sort of like those tests you used to take as a kid. Like, I took a test when I was in third grade where the instructions were read instructions and put your pencil down. Then there were questions like, in 1863, this person said this to this person. Who was it? Or the square root of the hypotenuse of the triangle times 4 times 8 times 12 times 16 times 42 equals, and stuff like that, and so on and so on and so forth. And we had to come up with a conclusion because the teacher knew that most people taking this test were not going to read the instructions. They were just going to start taking the test. It's happened to me. I was one of the victims. I can admit that. But that was the third grade. I've learned since then. But apparently, a lot of people have not learned since the third grade. And they still fall for this. Read the instructions, people. When you're about to bid on something, don't just bid on it and hope that it's what you're looking for. It's like buying a new house without going into it first, you know? Or going into a house and expecting the bedroom to be beautiful without going into the bedroom. You go everywhere but the bedroom. And when you go into it, you find that it's the size of a walk-in closet, but the rest of the house looks nice. You're missing out here. And it's all because of not having enough time. Oh, no, I don't have enough time to read the instructions. Why would I do that? I know this guy's not trying to cheat me. He's a nice guy. He has a plus rating on eBay. I trust him. Click. Then you get your box. That is a mistake, folks. And like I said, I hope none of my Geek Speak listeners have fallen for any of this. But to me, it's all sort of funny. Because I'm just like that. But yeah, here's some more of the story for you. Capitalizing on shortages of Microsoft's new video game console, several people have attracted bids as high as $600 or more on eBay this week by offering Xbox 360 boxes, just empty boxes, in ways that made it seem, without reading closely, that the items for sale were actually consoles. The common approach, acknowledging that the item was merely a box, but surrounding that disclosure with so many pictures and descriptions of the real console and accessories that someone merely skimming the listing might not notice. Like I said, read, folks. Reading is fun and educational. You should do it with your children as well, so they don't fall for things like this. There are quotes that like this that have been there. This is the Xbox 360 core bundle box. It would include things like a new Xbox, power cords, and a controller if there was actually an Xbox for sale in this auction. That's an actual listing there. That's not even a facsimile. That was an actual listing on eBay. And people bid. People bid. Their heart's delight, they bid because they wanted that Xbox 360. And apparently they like cardboard. You know, if you're buying it for your two-year-old, I can understand, because two-year-olds like to play with the box more than they like to play with the console. But if you're buying it for an 18-year-old, you're going to have some issues. And hopefully the 18-year-old is reading the instructions as well. In several instances, the online auction site has suspended the users who offered the boxes for sale after determining that they violated eBay's policy against deceptive listings. Several of the listings have been removed. One box seller said his listing was just a joke. Well, okay, you know what? See, that's where I draw the line also, because if you're putting a listing up there on eBay, chances are it's not a joke. Unless it's like a haunted Nintendo console, which, by the way, I think went for like $200 on eBay once. A haunted Nintendo console. Where every time you turned it on, there was a face in one of the games, and it always froze up, and blah, 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 blah. If I could find the website that talked about that, I'll link to that in the show notes as well, because that was absolutely hilarious, and I laughed over that for a long time. Anybody will put anything up on eBay other than like human feces, because you're not allowed anymore. But doing it as a joke, that's just sick, folks. If you're actually doing it to try and get some money out of it, by all means, people were stupid. I never actually thought people would bid on this, wrote the seller, who goes by the eBay screen name Silent Barrel. In response to an email inquiry Friday, I thought most people that were spending any money on anything would read what they are buying. Here's a newsflash. In a perfect world, everybody would read what they were buying. I know I would. And I do. But then again, all I have to do is think of the Sony rootkit scandal, which got started a little while back. And I've been guilty of this as well. How often do we just skim through those user agreements when we buy software? And just click, I agree, and hope that things work out in the end. Like I said, I'm guilty of it. I've done it in the past. Luckily, I was not one of those people who clicked I accept on the Sony rootkit and first had to uninstall and reinstall everything. But it could have been me. Luckily, I just don't listen to that type of music and I was safe. But that's the problem here. So many people just do not read. And there's a difference, too. Like, it's one thing to say I agree on a free software and hope for the best. If you get infected by a virus, run your virus software. If you pay $600 for an empty box, that's a bit more of a problem. There goes your Christmas spending money. And like I said, unless you're buying it for a two-year-old, they're gonna notice. So people, please, wise up a little. For my sake, because I don't want to have to read stories like this on GeekSpeak again. I'm hoping that everybody has learned their lesson here and stops buying boxes off eBay, unless you actually do want a box. And if you do, you're an interesting fella if you're spending $600 for one that you can very easily just find outside by the trash with your daily news and stuff like that. You ever go to a hotel with a free network? There aren't that many of them. They usually end up charging, but still, even if that's the case, you ever go to a hotel with a network? I'm sure many people have. Like, whenever I go to Anime Boston, there's always a port there that you're able to plug your computer into, your laptop, so that you can surf the net while you're there. I mean, what else are you going to do when you're cooped up in your room and you got nothing better to do? You surf the net, like everybody else does. It's fun. It's enjoyable. It's fun for the whole family. Sort of. Well, one guy got a bit annoyed when he was over at a hotel. And there was this guy stealing hotel bandwidth and using it for file sharing. And in the past, I've been the guy to say file sharing's not too bad. But like I said, the LimeWire thing here at the station pissed me off. And guess what? I'm not on the air, so I'm going to say my first curse. It pissed me the fuck off. Hey, that felt good. That felt nice. That felt freeing, I must say. It's not going to happen usually. Don't worry about it. I've been waiting to say a curse on the show for so long now. For 12 episodes, actually. And I finally just got my chance. It won't happen regularly because that's unprofessional, but I got to say it. I feel better now. Don't you? And if you were offended, I humbly apologize. It'll never happen again. Anyway, here is the story off of signal5.com. It's just a guy's blog, basically, but oh, what a blog it is. And here's the post, pretty much in its entirety. So it starts off with some geeky stuff. Keep reading. The funny part is later on. So I'm in Milwaukee at Ye Olde Holiday Inn Express. They have a wireless internet connection here, and it's been sucking all night. Like, I couldn't even do anything on it. I suspected someone running a P2P program and taking up all the bandwidth. So I fired up NTOP to analyze the type of traffic on the network and just who it was generating it. Lo and behold, someone was running a P2P application, naughty, 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 and taking up 1.6 megabits worth of bandwidth. That's bad. And I just said bits, megabytes, there we go. That's just not fair to the 20 other people on the network, so I decided to boot him from the network. I tried poisoning his ARP cache, ARP cache, and the default gateway's cache, but that only works on some wireless access points, apparently not this one. I can't send a 80211 Duth message. I hope that's how you pronounce it. It's D-E-A-U-T-H. I'm hoping it's pronounced Duth. Message from my OS X box, OS 10 box, because the card doesn't support raw packet injection. So what to do? What to do indeed? And that's when the geek cells kick in, folks. I noticed that his IP in the NTOP interface changed into a name. His Windows machine was spewing NetBIOS packets with his computer name in it. Now, I gotta tell you right now, straight up, okay? If you are going to file share, what the hell are you doing on a network where everybody can see what your name is? I mean, come on, be reasonable here. You got to be smart enough to realize if you're going to be file sharing on a regular basis, don't name your computer Tom. And especially don't name it like Tom Smith if that's your name. God, you know, I thought people would be smarter than this, but, well, apparently not. As I continue here, for the sake of his privacy, I've changed the name. But let's say it was Smith Laptop. So I pick up my cell phone and call the front desk at the hotel and ask for Mr. Smith's room. The lady at the front desk says, "Eric Smith?" And I tell her, "Yes! Of course, Eric Smith. I know him from college. He's my old poker buddy. We used to poke each other with sticks." Okay, it doesn't say that. And I tell her, "Yes." The phone rings. Someone picks up. The conversation goes like this. I'll change my voice for the sake of the phone call here. "Eric Smith?"
Yeah.
My name is Jim Grant, and I'm an investigator with the RIAA. Have you heard of us?"
What does that stand for?"
"Recording Industry Association of America. We represent several large record companies. In monitoring several P2P file sharing networks, we have found that you, Eric, are currently downloading copyrighted material. Are you aware that this is illegal?"
My laptop is off.
At this point, I no longer see him on the network. "We are in the process of filing 18,182 lawsuits against people who steal copyrighted music on the internet. We will continue monitoring these networks, and if we see you on them again, you'll hear back from us."
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
I hope you all enjoyed my acting there. So now my network is nice and speedy again, and some guy in his room trying to dry out his underwear. Ha! I should have recorded the call since my cell phone has the capability to record conversations. The above conversation can't even begin to show the fear in his voice. I'm sure he's scared as hell, wondering how they found out his name and that he was staying at a hotel and exactly what room he was in. This is classic, folks, I gotta say. And there's an edit here at the end of the page. "For those calling BS, I'm a network security engineer and I do security design work, penetration, testing, and social engineering work for a living. Yeah, it was kind of a mean thing to do, but some of us need to do real work from the hotel instead of download music. Plus, I possibly saved the guy from getting busted by the actual RIAA. Maybe someday I'll post my story about pretending to be a Comcast tech and walking some guy through troubleshooting a router, which was giving my home connection problems for over 3 months. Oh my god, this guy is my geek idol already. It was magically fixed the next day after he put in a faulty ATM interface ticket. Zing!" You guys can get the entire blog post and all of the people who responded to it at signal5.com. I will have it in the show notes. Oh my god, this guy is the man. Seriously, one of these days when I'm in a hotel, all right, if I ever have a laptop, which I hope I will get for graduation, by the way, because I need me an iBook. I realize I went over to the dark side when I got myself that Dell Windows computer, and I would like to rectify things. I'd like to make things right and get myself back a Macintosh computer, because Macintosh has gotten better. It's much better than the days of my Performa 575 1993 computer, which 12 megabytes of RAM. Thinking about it makes me all queasy and stuff. But yeah, times have changed, and I got to get me an iBook, but that's beyond the point. If I ever have a laptop and I ever plug it into the network and I find out that the network is as slow as molasses, I might have to do something about that. And I think I know exactly what to do now. I love maniacal laughing. This dude is the king of manipulation. And he deserves a medal or something because, like I said, he gave me an idea. And I like people who give me ideas, especially ones that are used for evil. Guess what, folks? It's listener email time. Yay! 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 Okay. Well, I got myself an email, second email, actually, from my buddy, and now yours, Rob from CoinOp TV. And I gave him a plug a couple episodes back. He sent me a very, very nice email. And I absolutely adore his website. And I love the web TV on it. Because CoinOp TV is retro, and I love retro. And Rob sent me another kind email here, and I am going to read it in its entirety. So here we go. Here is the email from Rob. Hey, Ian, thanks for the shout-out on your podcast. You're welcome, Rob, anytime. I'm still catching up on episodes, but I just listened to the epic episode 10, which, of course, was the first showcase spotlight focusing entirely on comics. By the way, congrats on making double digits. Can you picture triple digits? I hope so. Oh, my God. Wow. I'll be ancient by then. Actually, it only takes about a year, so who knows? I could certainly imagine that or something. I don't know. Maybe. Kind of. Wow, I'm scared now. Well, as you know, I'm a huge retro slash arcade gamer fan, but also a huge comic fan. Ah, the other side of the bill. Been a collector all my life, or at least since Baxter paper was invented. Wow, that was a while ago. I was really impressed with your background knowledge on some of the classics. I don't know how you find time to catch up on all the Golden Age issues, but it's refreshing to hear them discussed. I've not kept up that much with Marvel books the last 5 years or so. I feel that they get in some good writers and artists, but they only seem to stick around for 12 issues, or at least until Marvel decides to shake things up a bit. And I will firmly agree with that because I have been reading way too many comics lately that were absolutely fantastic and only last 12 issues. She-Hulk, for example. She-Hulk was one of my favorite comic books out there. Hilarious, hilarious comic. Got canceled after 12 issues. Sentinel. Canceled after 12 issues. Now it has a miniseries going. And She-Hulk has a second series going now as well. But I'd like to see series actually go the full route and not have to worry about getting a second chance. Because a lot of series do not need second chances. They're just that good. And don't have to worry about it. But anyway, back to his email here. The last few years, I think the only Marvel book I picked up regularly were Ecstatics, because I'm a big Mike Allred fan. Woot for Madman. Yeah, Ecstatics was hilarious. And actually, they're going to be coming out with I believe it's a miniseries, actually, focusing on Dead Girl, who is one of the main characters in that, because she's a dead girl, so it's kind of easy to bring her back from the dead, since she's already dead. Recently, though, I found that Young Adventures is quite fun, just as long as the regular artist is around. I really cannot handle what's happening with certain characters and how they die, then come back as you talked about them on the show. And everything about the Ultimates just makes me stay away, because I think Mark Millar is a big-headed ego kind of guy. Although the recent Jay Lee books look amazing. Now see, that's where I'm going to have to disagree with you, because I am absolutely loving the Ultimates, and the most recent issue just came out. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I do have it in my bag of goodies for the week. And as soon as I get home, that will be reading material, to say the least. Mark Millar is a sort of hit-or-miss guy. He has some runs on comics that I absolutely adore. And then he has runs on comics where I'm sort of thinking he sort of goes too far. Tries to take his style to the next generation. And he's kind of fine where he is. He doesn't really have to go anywhere else. Wanted was a great, great miniseries, which I'll mention here. Mark Millar did a great job on that. His initial run on Ultimate X-Men, I was sort of iffy about. And that one, I sort of think the book actually came more alive when Brian K. Vaughan and Brian Michael Bendis came on. They came on reverse of what I just mentioned, though. Brian Michael Bendis first, then Brian K. Vaughan. They did a very, very good job with Ultimate X-Men. I think they did a much better job than Mark Millar did. I don't think he's really suited for the X-Men too much. But Ultimates is his book. I've thought that for a while now. Sure, it can take a while to come out because Brian Hitch is the sort of artist that takes forever to finish his art. But he did a very, very good job on the book. And I'm actually sort of sad to see him go. I mean, Jeff Loeb and I can never pronounce his name. I think it's Madrera, are taking over very soon on the book. And Hitch did such a great job on the art, and Millar did an excellent job, in my opinion, on the writing. But again, opinions are opinions for a reason. So I'm sure there's going to be plenty of people out there who disagree with me. And if you do disagree with me, well, send me an email and tell me so. And I'll be more than happy to read it on the air. I've always had to go with the 50-50 principle of collection. This is back to his email now, obviously. A good writer and a good artist. And shamefully, it seems Marvel has lost touch with good artists. They at least have some good writers. Damn them for stealing away Jeff Loeb from DC. Let's hope Jeff Johns doesn't leave anytime soon. He won't. Jeff Johns is not going anywhere. Jeff Johns is staying where he is. Infinite Crisis is certainly proof of that. And Jeff Loeb, I liked his work on DC, but I think he's more of a Marvel guy. I really do. In the past, he's done very, very good work on Marvel. I believe he had a run on Fantastic Four for a while that I enjoyed. And like I said, I love Mark Millar's Ultimates, but I'm hoping Jeff Loeb will at least be up to snuff, and hopefully it shall be. And Jeff Loeb certainly deserves all of the praise that Rob gives him. I grew up a huge Marvel fan on X-Men and the Avengers, but the last 5 to 8 years I've really moved over into DC land, and good for you on that. They have some hack writers and artists, but I think there's a larger abundance of talent there that sticks around for a longer period of time. A lame book like The Flash really shined for years with Johns and Collins, and that I'll certainly agree with because my favorite Flash run ever, even better than Mark Waid's run, was Johns and Collins. I mean, the art was fantastic. Collins' art has never been better than it's been on The Flash. And Geoff Johns is great on anything he writes. I've never had a problem with him at all. I was happy to see you showing some love to DC, and maybe just a bit more for Marvel. Oh, well, I'm sure if you had an endless amount of money in your pocket, you'd be able to enjoy the best of both worlds. Oh, God, tell me about it. You would not believe how happy I'd be to spend maybe $40 a week on comics as opposed to the $20 that I spend. Life would be so much easier that way, although chances are I'd leave my house less. What are you going to do? Oh, that reminds me. I had a point in writing this. Ah, come on, man. You were making a good point up until now. You need to read Neil Gaiman's Sandman. Or Gaiman. I was rather stunned when it wasn't on your Have Read list. Also, if you are not reading or checking out the current Conan from Dark Horse, please give it a stab. I can't believe how sucked in I am on that book right now. And also, the secret awesome book of the year for me has been Legion of Superheroes with Wade and... as you hear some paper flip in the background, because I've actually got to have a printout here, and Kitson, if you only grab one issue to sample, check out issue number 3. I can't explain how knocked out I was just by this single issue. Oh, well, I didn't mean to write a big, huge email, but, you know, I had to listen to your big, long episode before I could form any opinions. Keep up the good work. Should you need any opinion-minded folks like myself for anything game-related, geek-related, comic, or sci-fi-related, don't hesitate to give me a holla. Yes, he did write holla, holla if you hear me. Maybe next week, maybe next year when Superman and X-Men 3 comes out, we can all sit around the campfire and discuss best comic movies, because the list that Wizard posted was just horrible, and I'll have to agree with that. Adios! Sincerely, Robert Welkner of CoinOp.tv. Well, again, thank you so much, Robert, for your email. And I am a large fan of Wade's run on Legion of Superheroes. Absolutely been enjoying that. I picked up every issue so far. Most things Mark Waid I try to pick up because I love this Fantastic Four. Read a couple issues of his Flash. I still have to catch up on that. And he does an amazing job with anything he puts his mind to, especially, well, God, I mean, come on, Kingdom Come. And also The Kingdom, which I actually just dug out of my collection a little while ago. And for those of you who frequent the Comic Geek Speak boards, I started a thread on that a little while back. And that was fantastic as well, introducing Hypertime into DC Comics, which I was sort of hoping would be an Infinite Crisis, but it doesn't really look like that right now. But as for your suggestion about Conan, I've never really been too much of a Conan the Barbarian fan. I tried picking up the beginning of the run, issues 1 and 2 I picked up, and I don't know, maybe it was just something about the art, but something just did not strike me right there. And for all I know, it could have gotten better since then, but just as of now, I haven't really been picking it up too much, and like I said, it could change in the future. I might actually try and pick up an issue here and there to see if you're right about that. But as for Sandman, yes, I do need to read Sandman. You're not the first person to tell me that. I have one of the books of Sandman at home, I think one of the series that came after Sandman, and I got to start picking up Sandman so I can just see exactly how awesome Neil Gaiman's work is. Because I picked up the 1604 miniseries, and that was fun. Wasn't perfect. But then again, what is? Some hard to find exactly perfect comics out there these days. But I will certainly try and get Sandman the next couple of months. I've been focusing most of my money, my trade money at least, on Fables, which I just got into. And I just picked up trade number 3 from Midtown Comics about a week back. And I'll hopefully be reading that over the next week here. But, yeah, I'm definitely going to try and pick up Sandman, and thank you very much for the suggestion there, as I choke on my own word, suggestion, there you go. But one thing that you mentioned about you possibly being on the show, well, I couldn't agree more, actually. In fact, I've decided what my next showcase spotlight is going to be, and I'm assuming that'll probably happen with episode number 20. At least that's what I'm going to be aiming for right now. Could be a little earlier, could be a little later, but I'll aim for somewhere around there. I'm going to be doing a showcase spotlight on retro gaming, which would include, obviously, the Atari, the Nintendo, the Genesis, the Game Gear, the original Game Boy, and also some of the new, or newer at least, retro, which of course are hacks of old Nintendo ROMs and stuff like that. And I'd like to see what people think about that. So I would definitely love to have you on that episode, Rob. And I'll see if Toby Cook from Seattle is interested in joining me on that, because I know he's a geek who's into everything. And I would certainly love to have him back on the show, because I absolutely love the rapport I had with him when we were having that comic episode. So like I said, Showcase Spotlight number 2 is pretty much set to be retro gaming. When it's going to happen, still up in the air. I'm going to try and work it out with both of them, see what's good for them, because they're both on the West Coast. So I'll have to figure out what date is good for all of us. And once I figure out, well, then I'll certainly have it worked out. But again, thank you so much for the email, Rob. And I hope to hear from you soon, both on the phone and an email. And those of you who do want to send emails over to GeekSpeak, you can do so at speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. And I'll be more than happy to respond and say, hey, thanks for listening. And then I'll read your email on the air because I like to read things. Hey, about reading. Read the stuff on eBay before you buy it. Sorry, just had to say it one more time. So, talk about segues. I'm going to start talking about some retro gaming now because, well, that's the way things work. So, I got an article here from BNL.gov, which I actually found through Slashdot this week because I like to go everywhere for my news. And they have an article on the first video game. Let me say that in a nice announcer voice. The first video game ever! Yeah, I hope I didn't blow your eardrums out with that. On March 13th, 1981, that was a day, the Brookhaven Bulletin published a story on employee William Higginbottom, I really hope I'm pronouncing that right, speculating that he may have invented the first video game with his tennis game of 1958. That long ago. 1958, folks. And here's the rest of the article here from BNL.gov. I won't read it all because it's really long. But Creative Computing magazine picked up on the idea and published it in an October 1982 article, crediting Higginbottom as the inventor. That is, until they heard from someone who could document an earlier game. An earlier game. The same story was reprinted in the spring 1983 issue of Video and Arcade Games, a sister magazine to Creative Computing. To date, no one has been able to prove an earlier claim. Higginbottom designed the game as entertainment for visitors' days at B&L. In the 1950s, most of the exhibits were static displays. Higginbottom, who was then head of the instrumentation division, said it occurred to him that it might liven up the place to have a game that people could play, and which would convey the message that our scientific endeavors have relevance for society. The division had a small analog computer that contained 10 direct-connected operational amplifiers. The computer's instruction book described how to generate various curves on the cathode ray tube of an oscilloscope? There you go, oscilloscope, using resistors, capacitors, and relays. Among the examples were the trajectory of a bullet subject to gravity and wind resistance, blah, 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 blah. All the technical stuff for you. The bouncing ball inspired Higginbottom to design a tennis game. Four of the operational amplifiers were used to generate the ball motions and the others to sense when the ball hit the ground or the net. and to switch the controls to the person in whose court the ball was located. So the first tennis game, the first game period, as early as 1958. Can you believe that? I certainly did not think that. I mean, I maybe thought like the 70s or something like that, because computers weren't really that big back in 1958, to say the least. But now here we are, with this claim coming out that the first video game came out in 1958. Outstanding, to say the least. Now, what other discoveries are out there, you know? I mean, like they said, they couldn't find an earlier one. But what if there was? You know? Could you imagine if, like, the earliest video game was from, like, the 1920s or something like that, and we just haven't found it yet? Be funny if it's just hiding somewhere in a undocumented thingamabobby. They have a Tennis for Two, they have some footage, streaming video, in Real Player format. And I highly recommend, for those of you who do not have Real Player and happen to have Media Player Classic, just download Real Player Alternative. You'll be able to access Real Player videos on your Media Player Classic, which is a nice and handy thing to use. And they have a video for Tennis for Two, which is what it was called, on that website. So was Higginbotham's game the first? Unofficially, it appears so. Here's what Higginbotham knew about the legal side of the question. Sanders Associates applied for the first video game patent in 1964. The patent was purchased by Magnavox, which put out the first simple game in 1971. Magnavox sued all other entrants to the field. Oh, come on! Suing people that easily. And suing continues today over video game patents. And by the way, actually, those of you who want to actually have a patent on a game, a claim's giving away all of their patents. So if you want to have the patent on Double Dragon, just go up and bid for it. Come on, somebody actually bid on Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen, for God's sakes, you know? Everybody's bidding on everything. I'll have a link to that in the show notes also, because I found that really interesting. You could actually own the patents for the distribution of these games for like $5,000 or something like that, which is really cheap for a video game patent. But then again, a claim went bankrupt, so you can certainly understand that. The lawyer tracked down Higginbotham, who had blueprints of the game to prove its date of creation. Other lawyers followed. Bum, bum, bum. Boom! Said Higginbotham. In 1981, one lawyer determined to break the Magnavox patent. In February 1982, I made a deposition in the lawyer's office before the Magnavox lawyers and others. In June, David Potter, Seymour Rankowitz, and I were scheduled to testify at a trial in Chicago to break the Magnavox patent. At the last moment, the case was settled out of court. So there you go. Very, very interesting material coming out here. The first video game ever. I wonder if it was as fun as Pong. That's what I'm wondering. Because it seems to be very similar to it. Because, you know, a tennis game, that's basically, in essence, what Pong was. And Pong was always fun. It still is today, actually. You know, if you pick up a game of Pong, you'd probably be able to play it for a long time. I wouldn't recommend it, but eh, you know. If you got free time on your hands, I'm sure they have the ROM somewhere on the net. I'm sure they do, actually. But interesting. Before Atari, before Magnavox, there was Tennis for Two. It's wind-up time here, folks, here on GeekSpeak, where I switch the talk over from the video game and tech side of things and comic side of things and whatever I feel like talking about to the sports side of things. Dan, 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 dan. Well, I'm in a really good mood today, and I'm not entirely sure why. Anyway, I'll start things off with the New York Giants, as they had a very, very good win up against the Dallas Cowboys this week, but was it really as good as people think it is? Seriously, I mean, the Giants looked awful in that game at times. I mean, the receivers could not catch anything. There were at least four passes, possibly even five or six, that Eli Manning threw that the offense simply could not get a hold of. And when you're the offense of a first-place team, you have to make plays like that. I wanted to see a great performance out of the Giants this week. I was disappointed. I hope in the next couple of weeks things get a little better. But I wouldn't be surprised if they don't because, well, this team still has some kinks to work out. It might take them another year. I'm glad to see that they are going to be a playoff team this year. And good for them because New York needs at least one, you know. But otherwise, you're looking at a terrible, terrible team. Not exactly terrible. I mean, just not exactly as good as they could be. Let's put it that way. But in some aspects, they have been terrible. At some times, they've looked terrible. At other times, they've looked like a first-place team. Maybe by next year, we'll have a team that actually regularly plays good and not in streaks or not just in the fourth quarter or the first quarter. Because they seem to have at least two quarters where they're good and the other two, they're terrible. And I'd like for them to even that out a little bit. I'd like to be able to watch a Giant game and not get absolutely upset over at least one aspect. But they have not done that for me so far. Eli Manning still needs some work. Still throws way too many lob passes. His receivers need to be on the same ball as him at all times or else they will not catch the ball. That much is a given. But as for the defense, I have no problems. Defense has been doing an amazing job. The one other thing, though, if they do not get rid of their field goal kicker by next week, I'm finding him and I'm giving him a slap. Because that was just terrible this past week. Oh my God. 2 weeks in a row, you miss 30-yard field goals. Not exactly good. And that seems to be some sort of mental block. I don't know. Philly is usually better than that. But he just has not been the past couple weeks. And that's just a major, major problem. And hopefully, they'll work the kinks out. And another team in football I've been very disappointed with lately are the Philadelphia Eagles. This team was a playoff caliber team. This team was a Super Bowl team last year. And in a matter of months, they completely fell apart. T.O., gone. Donovan McNabb, out. Half their offensive line, hurt. You have a team that's completely offensive incapable right now. You have a team in shambles. You have a team that needs to rebuild now, or they might not have a future. You cannot rely on a quarterback that will not get you there. If Donovan McNabb continues to get hurt, you're going to have to start looking for other options. Just like the Jets have to look for other options. As obviously, Chad Pennington is not getting it done for them. That's the thing about football. Without a quarterback, who are you going to have throw the ball? I'm still looking for that question to be answered. And I doubt it ever will. Because you're not going to have your running back throw the ball every time. There aren't many Dave Meggetts in the world. Here's the windup. Here's the pitch. Every single Monday here on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org, you'll be able to hear me, Ian Levenstein, alongside Jason Green and Joey, whatever his last name is, and David, here on the Sporting Goods from 2 to 3. And we have one more show left on the season, and then from there, our time will probably change ever so slightly, but we'll figure that out as time goes on. The email address here at GeekSpeak, once again, is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. When I am live, which should actually be next week, I'm not entirely sure yet, but I should be live next week again, Thursday from 6 to 7, here on Brooklyn College Radio, and streaming on the web, brooklyncollegeradio.org. You'll be able to call in. Number to call is 718-951-4444. That's 718-951-4444. If anybody is indeed interested in calling in on the show, it's a new month over at Podcast Alley. So over at podcastalley.com, there is a link to Podcast Alley on my blog, which is also the website for GeekSpeak, speakgeekspeak.com. So anybody who wants to vote for me on Podcast Alley can do so. Just follow the link at the website, and you'll be able to vote. And of course, anybody willing to subscribe to either the iTunes feed or the FeedBurner feed, there are links to that as well at the site. So, once again, I am Ian Levenstein, and this has been GeekSpeak, Episode 12, here at speakgeekspeak.com. Like I said, we will be live again next week, but I hope you guys enjoyed this pre-recorded episode. I only pre-recorded by a day, so most of the news will still be fresh in everybody's minds by tomorrow. So, until next week, have a great week, enjoy your geek. Take care, everybody. I will see you next week. It's time to speak geek with the geeks. Gaming, tech, news, and more here on Geek Speak. Thursdays from 6 to 7 on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming on the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. Let's geek out, everybody.